Dr. Carter, as it relates to the risk being worth the reward, we've seen the activities over the past week or so kind of move that justice, the needle towards justice. But beyond that, are these protests in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic part of a sacrifice that just must be made?
I don't know if it must be made in this way, because I think Mark is exactly right. There's a lot that can happen at the local level, right, that we can think about. But again, we've never been in this moment, right, protesting in the midst of a pandemic. And so we have to be thinking about different ways that we can be effective. So for sure, I mean, I think it's a noble thing. I don't think anyone here is suggesting that people don't follow their hearts. But we also know that this can be a very foolhardy thing also. Right. I mean, many of us, I mean, I have elderly parents, you know, or have people who have other conditions like hypertension, diabetes, and other things that make them particularly vulnerable. But these are very perilous times. And so if we think that the police won't kill us, the virus certainly can do that as well in very short order. And so I think we have to be mindful that if we have these other tools where we can organize and think about another kind of strategy, because people keep talking about November 3rd, but that's an election, right? We have a lot more at stake in local communities. Not to say that the president doesn't matter. We absolutely know he does. He's terribly mismanaged this whole crisis. But we also know that this is not our last bite at the apple. Right. If you voted in D.C. this week, you know that there are city council seats that are up for grabs, right, that you need to be paying attention to. And so there are a lot of things that we can use, the very tools that we use to organize these protests for, to organize different kinds of coordinated actions, because different moments call for different strategies. Right. We cannot be asking people. I don't think it's fair to say, go out here and potentially kill yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know that necessarily does what we think it's going to do. It's noble, perhaps, but I think it may be short-sighted, because we need this energy and we need this activism for years to come, because these are centuries old problems. They're not going away in 2 months or 2 weeks, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think it's something we have to think about, because this pandemic, even though we have hardly talked about it in these last few weeks because of these protests, in this last week because of these protests, is still here.
Absolutely. And certainly there is a concern that we will be talking about it a lot more as the year goes on. And I think that is something that everyone needs to keep in the forefront. I want to thank Reverend Amar Thompson for sharing with us. I know that you have another commitment, but I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts, your wisdom, and your expertise in this regard. And we certainly wish you the best. Continued good health for you and your son.
So yes, congratulations.
Thank you so much. God bless you all. Good to see you all.
Thank you.
And we also now would like to welcome Matthew Horace, who is the author of the book, The Black and the Blue, A Cop Reveals the Crimes, Racism, and Injustice in America's Law Enforcement. Matt, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Good evening, Harold, once again.
Absolutely. I want to start with you as we talk about, you know, this conversation. One of the things that I'm sure has been, you know, particularly difficult for, you know, people like yourself, former law enforcement, is to watch the horrific video of what happened to George Floyd. And there have been discussions, not only just in this forum, but about conversations about defunding or reducing the funding for police departments. What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, I heard that earlier about out in Seattle. There was some push towards that. I don't know that defunding policing will help our communities in the way that we need, because we still need police services. We just need good police services. And that's a lot of what we talk about in the book. You know, when you call 911, you want help, but you want to know who's coming, and you want to know which type of officer is going to be showing up. So I don't know that defunding is the answer. I've always maintained, and we talk about it in the book over and over, that recruitment, hiring, training, and accountability really is the answer, followed by sweeping criminal justice reform to get to the point where we're not seeing these sorts of things. This thing in Minneapolis was a travesty on every level. And this whole idea about the thin blue line and not telling on your partners and not getting involved. It's just, it's horrible on every level.
Mm-hmm. Timothy, what do you think about that? Same question about reducing funding. I mean, that's such a broad thing when you're talking about cutting back the money for police departments, even in the context of where we are right now.
Well, having worked in law enforcement for almost 30 years and having worked at the highest level in the organization, I don't support that. The thing is that what's going to happen, you're going to take away the services that are needed in our minority communities. You're going to take away the little bit of programs that are working in some of the communities. They're going to be gone. What the mayors should be doing is trying to find funds to implement or to infuse into the community to assist to assist the minority communities to get the services, to enhance the services, or to enhance their communities to the point where they can, where what we see now is not a common thread. I was listening to BBC this morning on the way in, and there was a discussion about, you know, the minority communities and about the underground funding, which is in dealing with narcotics, prostitutions, and these types of things. Well, what law enforcement should be doing is doing some effective constitutional policing to dissuade this type of activity in our minority communities, bringing in the business community. Again, I talk about the stakeholders again, bringing in the stakeholders so that as you deal with these things, you can put something in its place so that these issues won't come back. Again, that goes with the creativity of the leadership. If you're doing the same thing, Einstein says, you do the same thing over and over again, well, that's a sign of insanity. And there's a whole lot of insanity on display in this country. I did about 4 interviews this week with foreign press, and the world's watching this country. And they all ask me, what is happening in the United States? What's happening in the minority communities? It's like they'd never seen this before because of what happened with George Floyd. Mm-hmm. You see, yeah. But the thing is that, as I tell them, this was going on longer than I've been living, and it was going on before my parents were born. Just so happened, technology has changed and has uncovered the ugliness of America, and we see what's been going on for decades and decades. Now, it's incumbent upon us to try to do something about that, not try, but to do something about that and make a change. We can make a change, but we need to go about it. It's not going to be easy. You got to roll up your sleeves, and it's hard work. It's not going to happen in 1 year, 5 years. You're talking about a 10 or 20-year process. But if you do it, it can and will be done.
Mm-hmm. Can I make a comment?
Please.
I think Timothy's made a good point. Let me look at it, the same point, though, through a different lens. The way in which money is used to solve and deal with social problems is an art form, and it's something that requires great sophistication. No one, I think, is going to be supportive of decreasing the budget for police department because at the time we need that service. In fact, I think just the opposite fear. As a public health official and as the former commissioner of health in DC, I watched persistently the public health budget cut over and over again for the sake of the police department and the criminal justice system because of the challenges that we were facing during the time that I was there. Public health is being cut back drastically across this country, and military budgets at the federal level and police budgets and so forth at the local level will increase. I'm very concerned about that. But what I'm really more interested in is how we bring those two communities together. They're really not that different in some many important ways. If you think about the community demand for a conversation with our police about what is our shared vision for what a safe city looks like, what is our shared vision for what a protected community environment looks like, is the same exercise that we have to have for what is a healthy city look like. What does are the elements that requires for us to have the kind of a health infrastructure that allows each individual to maximize their own God-given human potential. Those two conversations should not be occurring separate. They're all part of one sense of a vision that we all have about the way we want to live our lives. And so what I would urge is that as we put forward money and have conversations about certainly training the police, which is essential, and as we start thinking about the role of the police in our society, let's make it a conversation about what is the society that we are looking for? What is the environment that we have to say? How do we give ourselves a safety that allows our children to go outside and have their childhood back? How do our kids jump rope and play in the street so they can be healthy? How can seniors walk so that they prevent the diabetes that Dr. Carter talked about? You can't walk in our community if you're afraid of being hit in the head by somebody. So these are all interrelated. And so my only point ultimately is that money and the way you use money to affect social change does not have us walled off in our compartments. If we were intelligent, we would use money and budgets to bring the pieces together in a coherent, multidisciplinary whole.
Go ahead, Dr. Carter.
I would just say, I think what Dr. Tuckson is talking about is what some of these defund advocates are talking about, right? Is that it's not to say that we don't think that there should be any police at all, although there are those who say, let's abolish it altogether. But what most people are saying is many of the things that we're asking police to respond to, like mental health distress and other things that they're not trained for, would be better served if we actually had community mental health, which we used to have, but we defunded, essentially, right? So that doesn't exist as a thing anymore. That's what my mother started in as a therapist in Prince George's County. And those things are gone. So you're asking police to do things that they're actually not trained to do. And then there are also those who say, well, these underground economies that Mr. Williams was talking about a moment ago are funded by something. So what is that something? Let's get to that, right? And perhaps we might even want to think about decriminalizing certain kinds of things, right? Perhaps sex work, for example, so that it perhaps leads to harm reduction. So I think there are a lot of conversations when we just use the word defund the police that are happening, and they're not all the same thing, but they're probably more of let's spend less time trying to lock people up and more time trying to figure out why people are turning to certain activities or behaviors in the first place, right? Rec leagues, which we know are great things to have, particularly in the summertime when schools are closed, are not available. So this is maybe a prime time for mischief. So what does that look like, right? How can we be creative with what we have so we bring about a better life, not just for the citizens, but even law enforcement officials? I'm sure there are many people who are doing parts of their job, like in some places where they're doing quasi-immigration enforcement, that they don't want to do and that they're not trained for, right? And so that we can think about this as being a both and proposition, because police officers are also members of these same communities, right? They live somewhere. They're not separate from us.
Now, let's talk about that. We have a Facebook comment, and this goes to the heart of that. And I want Matt to take a look at this. Toussaint Werner, he's asking, how do you train beyond implicit biases, you know, that exist in as many Black police officers as white police officers, whether they are in the community that we live in, or as we have seen in the DC Metro, we have officers that come from outside of the community, policing communities that they have no ties to. Matt, your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, training is one thing, but enforcing the rules and regulations and policies of the department are a whole different thing. And you know, there's this idea that you can legislate behavior, but you can't legislate hearts. So many departments do have these training initiatives to teach officers about self-awareness and implicit biases, but you still have these things happening because you haven't gotten to their hearts. I love the organizations with, you know, we talked last time, Harold said, you know, from a leadership perspective, that culture eats strategy for lunch sometimes. So even the greatest leaders with the greatest ideas and the greatest programs and training still fail oftentimes because you're not getting to the core. I like the one thing I like about what happened in Minneapolis last week. The only thing from a police standpoint was was that they fired the officer immediately, the one officer, not fast enough in the eyes of some. And then obviously they fired all four at the same time, but now they've all been charged. There needs to be a disincentive for this type of behavior. I heard in Colorado today, they're moving towards legislation that would enable people to sue police officers personally in areas where there's a civil rights violation. And they're also moving to for legislation so that if police officers are terminated or charged with excessive force, they can't be hired in other police departments. So I think at the end of the day, we got to start to get hit people where it hurts the most and, you know, take this risk out of our communities. And that's where you're going to get some of these answers.
Dr. Tuckson, you wanted to talk about an announcement regarding families of COVID-19.
Yes, I do. And by the way, one other thing I want to amend the other advice that I gave around masks, goggles, so social distancing and so forth and so on, to also say that if you are also around people who are vulnerable when you go back home, you should, and you have to socially isolate, get tested. And the mayor made an announcement today, I thought very responsibly, the mayor, around increasing availability of testing. The announcement I want to make is that just as we believe and understand that Black lives matter, Black deaths have to matter too, that our dignity has to be upheld when we die. COVID, one of the terrible things about COVID is that you die alone in the hospital and the funerals are small and we don't get to mourn as a community. The Black Coalition Against COVID is hosting with WHUR, WHUT, WPFW, the Washington Informer on June 14th at 11 to 12, a time for remembrance of those families that have lost a loved one from COVID. We need to elevate this up. Those lives cannot be lost in the dark of night, in the quiet, in the silence. We have to have a chance to mourn as a community. I'm asking anyone out there who has a family who lost a loved one, contact me immediately. I'm gonna give you my personal phone number, 612-839-4810, 612-839-4810. We need to hear from you. We want to put you on the air and have you a part of this day of celebration. At the end of the day, we have to realize that if Black lives matter, Black deaths have to matter, and we have to honor our own. And this is what the Black Coalition Against COVID is doing.
So I need to go back to today's funeral in Minneapolis for George Floyd, because as I said in the very beginning of this discussion, very influential Black folks were in that room. They were participating there. They were in the audience. You had, you had T.I., you had Kevin Hart, you had some others. There was no social distancing. Tiffany Haddish was there. She had on a mask. Kevin Hart did not, but he was sitting next to Tiffany Haddish. And like you said, if Black lives matter, Black health matters, and just sitting there and watching the people in that audience gave so many mixed messages. I'm raising my hand. I'm saying, help me here, Doc, because there's no clarity here.
No clarity. And at the end of the day, what the really scary part is when we send these, it means that our young people don't get the message and they think it is okay to be loose and to be relaxed. And so I think one of the things we have to do is start holding our people accountable for their behavior. Again, I come back to what this is about for me. Moral outrage requires moral responsibility. One of the things that we're happy about, at least in our city, is we got our big G Glover from the Backyard Band. We've been working with the Black Coalition and COVID along with the bus system. We're gonna be, you'll see his face coming in the next couple of days on the buses, him wearing a mask and saying, I wear mine, you wear yours. We need every legitimate voice in our community to keep the pressure on and not get loose. And so I'm really, really hoping that our celebrities will be called to task and say, excuse me, Kevin, we appreciate you were there, but look at the message gave to our children. That's irresponsible, my brother. We love you, we care about you, but stop doing stupid things.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Carter, you're nodding your head.
Absolutely, because I walk around with a mask at all times, even if I'm not around people, I keep it in my pocket, right? Just in case I get near or something, right? I run, so it's hard to run with a mask, but I always have it on my neck or somewhere around me. just to go in a store, and I'm riding through my neighborhood or I'm in communities and people have nothing on, right? I mean, seeing people with small children, nothing on, right? I mean, it is distressing, right? Because I mean, it's like, am I getting a different set of news than somebody else? And maybe because one of my relatives is an immunologist, so he's always like, look, watch it, right? Like, it doesn't need a lot of room, right? It's a virus, you can't see it. But I mean, it is distressing when you see people out as if nothing is wrong. And I think this partial reopening also sent a really bad message because everyone was saying it's too soon. We understand the economic constraints, but it's too soon. And yet we did it anyway. And so I saw people hanging out, you know, on patios, having lunch the other day. And I'm just like, this is not okay. But we're doing it. And so I think there are so many bad messages coming, not just from celebrities, but even our legislators and our leaders, right? That it's safe to open it. I mean, because I think that gives the impression that even though you can't sit inside, even though, you know, you have to stay 6 feet apart, it still says things are reasonably safe when we know they're not.
Mm-hmm. I have another Facebook question. I think this is a really good question. I'll post this one for Tim. Apostle Frank Burton Jr. says, how do we recognize provocateurs for disrupting our protests? What should we look for, and what are they bringing to they're bringing chaos, is what he's saying. How do they put their bling into the crowds?
Well, as I was observing the protests across the country, there was one thing that stood out. These protests, number one, were very organized, and number two, there was embedded in these protests individuals who were up to no good. There was a vignette. I don't know if you guys saw this. I think it was in Minnesota, where this white girl was spray painting on the side of the business "Black Lives Matter." So happened that Black Lives Matter person was there and asked her what she was doing. She was saying that, you know, Black Lives Matter don't, you know, we don't deface, we don't loot, we don't do that. We protest and we march. And the white girl says, well, some black person told me to do this.
Hmm.
Well, see, now what if that wasn't caught on television, now you have Black Lives Matter has a blemish of saying, well, they're out there doing all this, they're doing all this, and they in fact are not doing that. I do a lot of testifying in both state and federal court in both criminal and civil rights cases, and Black Lives Matters are there from time to time. And I tell you, if they comport themselves very well in court, there's never been no problems. The judges never had to say anything.
Yeah.
So the media has given them a jacket given them a bad jacket. The thing is that, you know, as you go out there, there is a planned agenda for these protests. Now, hopefully, these implants are gone now, but during when dust comes,
yeah,
here they come.
Yeah. I only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to give everyone about 30 seconds to kind of, you know, make a final point. Matt, I'll start with you, and I'll put my hand up because I've got a hard out, but please, your final thoughts here.
I just think that now's the time. We all need to come together and need to push for sweeping criminal justice reform in whatever ways that's meaningful in your own communities. We can't take the foot off the pedal, just like the officer's knee was on the neck.
Yeah, a very, very important point. You know, Dr. Carter, your final thoughts about, you know, the political climate and where we are in these two pandemics. A minute or so.
I think the political climate is dire. I think it's more important now than ever that people be participatory. I know that you may be disenchanted. I know that you may not feel motivated, but we cannot do 4 more years of Donald Trump. And if you can't bring yourself to vote in the actual election for the president, think about the down ballot races. You have local community offices to vote for. You have state wide offices in some cases to vote for. Vote for those, because those are also really important to your life. So think about this holistically. Wear your mask, wash your hands, social distance, and stay a safe distance away from other people, and watch all those excretions from your eyes and other places.
Spoken like a true Howard University professor.
I can't even talk anymore. But yes.
Yeah. Tim, I'll give you a minute to share your final thoughts that we can.
Okay, sure. You know, I think, you know, I've seen a lot during my professional career, and I think the clarion call has come. I think that this is not about advocacy. This is about civic responsibility. I think that we need to come together, like Dr. Tuckson's talk, his comments about public health. No one entity can do this by themselves, but collectively we can come together, make a major change in our communities that will have that will metastasize itself, if I can use some medical terms here, metastasize itself all across the country for positiveness. And I think that we need to, again, talk is great, but we need to roll up our sleeves, sit down, and make some meaningful changes and implement them in our local communities that will go up through the state and federal levels. And we may not be around to see the change, but one thing for sure, a change will come.
Indeed, so well said. I'm interested to see how police reform moves from this point forward. I think it'll be very interesting to watch, particularly as we go into this political season, not only, you know, perhaps changing leadership at the top, but like Dr. Carter said, down ballot. Dr. Tuckson, I'll let you have the last word.
What we at the Black Coalition Against COVID are saying and understand is no people but a people can save a people. Calvin Rolock taught me that. All I'm urging is every community leader, come together. Let's all stitch together. It would take all of us fighting this common enemy. And above all, do the right thing. This virus ain't over. The virus ain't tired. The virus did not take a vacation. The virus doesn't care about social policy. Mm-hmm. It is going to be there. Do the right thing. Go to our website, blackcoalitionagainstcovid.org, and let's figure out how you can join with us in this fight.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you know, yesterday, former President Barack Obama said that, you know, the mayors have the power to make change in police departments. But like Dr. Carter said, whether you're a big city mayor that you're voted in, or whether you are a small town mayor who is appointed by a council, you still have to vote for that council. And so if you do not vote, all the marching in the world will not see the kind of change that so many people want. I want to thank all of you for participating in this really important conversation. It's important for us to continue to carry the banner here. So I want to thank you, Dr. Naomi Carter. I want to thank Timothy Williams, Matt Horace. Also, I would like to thank Reverend Mark Thompson, who was on earlier, as well as, of course, Dr. Reed Tuckson. Again, thank you all so very, very much. We want to thank you, our listeners and our viewers, for joining us for Justice in Black and White, a special virtual town hall edition of the Daily Drum. And of course, you can catch a rebroadcast of tonight's show on our sister station on WHUT-TV, Channel 32. That's at 10 o'clock tonight. And of course, we want to make sure that you join us tomorrow at 7 for part 3. It's titled, It Ain't Over, The Minding Your Vote and Minding Your Business. This has been a special edition of The Daily Drum. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.